This story is about a streetcar. We don't see many streetcars anymore. But years ago, when this story took place, every city and most towns had electric cars on tracks running right down the middle of their main streets. They called the driver of a streetcar a motorman, and he stood up in the front and drove with a funny little detachable handle and clanged the bell. The conductor stood in the rear and took the passenger's money in a glass fare box. When the streetcar came to the end of the line, the motorman would take his little driving handle and walk to the rear end, which could become the front end of the car, and put it into an electric box there. And the conductor would take his fare box to the front end, which could become the rear end, and take up his stand. Each end of the streetcar was open, but the middle section was glassed in like a fishbowl for people. Our story is about an all-night streetcar. McCroy was its motorman, and he would always clang his bell loudly as he went down Main Street at 3 o'clock in the morning. Firstly, it stopped the extreme silence of the empty, lonesome city from being so silent. Secondly, it started some noise being noisy. But most importantly, it made McCroy feel better. But on moonlit three, conductor to leave his fare box at the rear end, which could be the front end of the little car, and come to the front end, which could be the rear end, and clang the bell for the motorman. The night of our story, the city was lonesomer, and the moonlight was brighter than ever.
Moonlight is magical, McCroy said thoughtfully.
Bosh,
said the conductor. McCroy pushed his driving handle over to full speed ahead. The little car swayed back and forth and up and down with a motion that the conductor described as definitely nautical as he sucked on a lemon drop. Suddenly, an aghast look appeared on McCroy's face, and without a word, he collapsed into a neat little heap on the floor. The conductor knew what to do in such an emergency. He must stop the car and administer first aid to the motorman. This he promptly did, and soon the motorman came to where he'd been before.
Motorman, how do you feel now? What caused your collapse?
Conductor, in all the time I've been motorman of this all-night streetcar, I've never seen one.
One what?
One passenger.
It's unheard of, but our duty is clear. We must stop for him.
Well, I guess so,
said McCroy, none too enthusiastically, as he returned to his motorman stool. Soon the passenger appeared. He was a very small man, clad in a huge overcoat that draped about him and looked like a partially collapsed tent. He mounted the watcher's step spryly, dropped a dime into the glass fare box, and sidled down the aisle through the sliding door to the glassed-in middle section. And then he said,
E pluribus unum and backwards Neptune.
Immediately, the all-night streetcar began moving violently, but in the wrong direction. McCroy, the motorman, finding himself in the wrong end of his car, picked up his driving handle and walked mechanically to the other end of the car and began to operate there. He looked as if he were about to collapse again. But the conductor, who was non-collapsible, had begun to crank his fare box and was paying no attention to directions. In a minute or two, out came no dime, but instead a smooth, white seashell.
This will never do,
he said to himself, as he walked down the aisle and confronted the passenger.
Your fare, sir, is a shell.
Huh, said the passenger. That insidious machine would ruin any decent magic. Let us see if my fare is not fair. In God we trust, Neptune.
The conductor opened his hand again and now found a dime there. He blinked.
Oh,
he said, as he blinked again.
I'm sorry, sir. I thought it was a shell.
By this time, the streetcar was rushing so fast through the moonlight that the echoes of McCroy's bell were left far behind and could be heard whining in the distance. The buildings began to diminish in size and became farther and farther apart. McCroy realized that they were nearing the far end of the line, nearing the palisades that dropped off into the rolling sea. So he tried to slow down. But the more he tried, the faster the little car went. By this time, the conductor realized what was happening. He ran up to McCroy and shouted in an angry voice,
You're going too fast. Slow down.
But McCroy just shrugged his shoulders and threw up his hands. He could do nothing.
I'll report you to the superintendent for speeding,
the conductor shouted. But McCroy said nothing, just pointed at the passenger. So the conductor confronted the passenger again.
Do you have anything to do with this?
He asked suspiciously. Everything, the passenger replied.
Well, stop it at once,
the conductor shouted, and he began to shake the passenger's shoulders. This made the passenger furious, and as he shook himself loose, he said, Gadzooks, Oddsbodkins, fishhooks, faster Neptune, faster. And the all-night streetcar began to go so fast that the landscape outside was just a white blur of moonlight. There was a roar of wind mingled with the sound of ocean waves dashing upon a beach. The conductor was truly frightened now.
The end of the line, the cliff, the ocean, we're coming to it. Stop the end of the line.
Olaf. And just then, the trolley plunged over the Palisades. Down, down, down it plummeted and into the sea with a terrific splash. Down, down it sank through the pale, moonlit water. Deeper and deeper it went into the darker depths. McCroy, who had recovered completely and was thinking quite clearly, had closed the in-between glass doors which kept the ocean out. Now he turned on the inside lights. Down, down sank the streetcar until at last, with a little jolt, it hit the bottom of the sea, and right side up, too. For a while, it rolled along the bottom of the sea, but more and more slowly, until finally it stopped in a forest of seaweed. McCroy looked out of the window, and he saw the long orange fronds of the weed coiling gracefully through the dimly moonlit green-blue water, and the little fern-like fronds flowing gently to and fro in the breezy ripples. And he saw chubby goldfish swimming contentedly about, and lazy halibut flapping past. And he wasn't frightened at all.
This is beautiful.
It is, isn't it? And the passenger smiled at McCroy. You may have noticed that every time I say a certain word, something magical happens. Remember that. I must leave you now. Ocean Neptune. Then he slipped off his overcoat, and muttering something, he melted out of the window. In a trice, he was splashing gleefully about, and McCroy was amazed to see that he had a tail.
Why, he's a merman.
Merman! I don't like this at all,
the conductor shouted, frightened and furious. The conductor began pacing angrily up and down the middle of the streetcar. As he did so, McCroy noticed that suddenly the ocean was filled with hundreds of fish, swimming slowly past and staring in at the angry conductor. There were big polka-dotted fish and chubby little striped fish. There were middle-sized goldfish and teeny-weeny silverfish. But they all had one thing in common. Their eyes seemed to almost pop out of their heads as they watched the conductor. This made him even angrier.
I feel like I'm in a goldfish bowl.
McCroy couldn't help but laugh.
Well, we are in a kind of people bowl.
I don't think this is funny at all. Get me out of here!
In a twinkling, the conductor was outside of the car in the water and floundering fiercely. When the merman blew a series of bubbles, all the hundreds of fish swam round and round the conductor and looked at him with their big pop eyes. Then the fish all swam over to one side, and when the conductor saw what was coming, he looked more frightened than ever, for swiftly approaching on his tummy was an athletic octopus with boxing gloves on each of his eight arms. The bubbling conductor put his fists up, but in very short order, the octopus had punched the conductor four times on the right side of his jaw and four times on the left.
Oh, oh,
said McCroy as he winced eight times.
I wish I were out of here. They even have prize fighters in Neptune's.
What happened?
Asked the conductor in a very small voice as water spilled out of his ears.
I can't quite explain it, but here we are, high and dry, on Main Street again.
Was I asleep? I dreamed.
Dreamed? Dreamed? Look at your pockets. They're full of seaweed. You're dripping. You've just been beaten up by an octopus.
The conductor rubbed his tender jaw with one hand and scratched his head with the other. It was all most mysterious and needed pondering. So he pulled his pipe out of his pocket and began to light up to aid in pondering. But there was a small red herring in the pipe.
Hey,
said McCroy anxiously.
You're asphyxiating him.
Who cares,
said the conductor. And he threw the little fish away. McCroy caught him and put him in his hat. Now, wring out your coat and empty your pockets. Give him some water. So the conductor did, and the little red herring in McCroy's hat gulped greatly and gave a weak but thankful flip of his fins. McCroy started the all-night streetcar again, and as the gray morning light began to steal over the city, he trundled the little trolley back to the car barn and tiptoed her in so he wouldn't wake up the superintendent. It was lucky that he did, too, because the wheels were all tangled up with seaweed. McCroy got out and began to run. He ran all the way home, bareheaded, too, for he had the fish in his hat in his hand. Up the 6 flights of stairs in his boarding house he bounded, a flight at a time, and when he reached his little room, he poured the fish into a bowl, added water, salt, and pepper. The herring sneezed.
Chip! I'm sorry, said McCroy. You should be, said the herring.
McCroy was very, very surprised. He sat down on his bed, still very surprised. He lay down on his bed, quite surprised.
I must have been dreaming, he thought, as he went to sleep.